This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 16 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all traveling this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other podcasts at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast. Again, I do not claim any expertise in this area. I haven't done a thesis or even a huge research project on it, but I think it's important to note that while those are obviously not bad things and they surely are admirable, they're not necessary. God did not put this information and heart knowledge far from our reach. How kind would that be? So if you're going through a terrible time, life feels like it's over, your heart is breaking, you're terrified, but God says, sorry, you have to dig and research and spend years just to know I'm with you and have a plan. That's not what a kind, loving father would do. And hopefully up to this point, we can all agree on that matter. As I sat down to write this a few weeks ago, lots of heavy things were laying on my heart. Just the night before I wrote this, the 18-year-old of a family that I grew up with was in a serious car accident, leaving him currently unresponsive and with a hard-to-read prognosis. Is God still faithful? Another mom is still reeling in the pain of losing her 2-year-old son in a freak pool accident. Is God still faithful? My best friend is working through the emotions of infertility, wanting a baby so badly while watching others as they get their 2 pink lines. Is God still faithful? Every day I go to work, I literally see many people dying from cancer. One of those extra special to me is dealing with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, the treatments for it, and trying to figure out her future and if she's going to make it to her daughter's wedding in January. Is God still faithful? When marriages fail, jobs are lost, your friends desert you, you are so depressed you can't get out of bed, is God still faithful? Is it okay to even ask this question? Well, I sure hope so, because I am. But if we're going to ask the question, we need to stop and listen for the answer. The Bible is not silent on suffering. Actually, I don't think I can think of a single person highlighted in the Bible that didn't go through at least one hard thing. The first person that comes to so many people's minds when they think of biblical suffering has got to be Job. If you don't know his story, here's the overview. Job was a great man. He had morals, he was blessed, and therefore incredibly prosperous and wealthy. Satan saw that he was both blessed and loved God, so he challenged God, saying that anyone that was blessed would love God. But Satan felt if Job knew suffering, that his love for God would go away. God took the challenge and allowed Satan. Note that God did not personally do this stuff to Job, he just allowed it. But he allowed Satan to cause things to happen. Loss of his wealth, loss of his children, loss of his health, all right around the same time. Now, I'm not saying that Job was ever happy about it, but even in the darkest moments when his friends and even his wife were against him, telling him that he had somehow done something wrong, he didn't. Or that he should just go ahead and curse God and die, he didn't. He did not understand the why, but he understood that God had a reason and therefore chose to trust him. At the very end of all of it, Job gets a chance to speak directly to God. Of course, he asks the question, why did you allow this to happen to me? And God's response is not exactly what I would have expected. He doesn't give a specific answer. He proves his glory and power to Job and basically says, how can you understand? My ways are mine, and I am too mighty for you to be able to comprehend. And after all that he had been through, after speaking directly to God, after all the torture and pain, both physically and emotionally, Job was satisfied with that answer. Here's where I'm going to throw the cliche verse that gets told to anyone going through some sort of trial or crisis. Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purposes for them. This verse is so encouraging. All things work together for our good. But I think the part we skip over or don't think too much about is the end, according to his purposes. God has a use for everything that happens to us. To fully believe this verse, we need to be able to trust his purposes, even when we don't understand them. The next question is, why? Why should we trust him? Is he faithful? The answer, of course, is yes. But what kind of proof are you looking for? The answer is in the past. You can look at your own past. Has God gotten you or people close to you through tough situations before? Do you have that baseline? Think back. I want you to think of another hard time in your life and remember how God got you through it. He's done it before. He can and will do it again. One person who went through so much turmoil but was so good at looking back at God's faithfulness was David. Think about it. He was the smallest and least favorite son. He got God's promise of becoming king but had to wait 15 years for that to happen. And during that time, King Saul figured it out and spent a lot of time hunting and plotting David's murder, but also put him through the emotional whiplash of wanting David to come back and basically be a son to him. And that was all before all the drama of becoming king of an entire nation. During this time period, David wrote many psalms dealing with his emotions of pain and feeling abandoned. Psalm 77 goes through all of these emotions, many of which I felt in times of turmoil or tragedy myself. Verses 1 through 3 say, I cry out to God, yes, I shout. Oh, that God would listen to me. When I was in deep trouble, I searched for the Lord. All night long, I prayed with hands uplifted toward the heaven, but my soul was not comforted. I think of God and I moan, overwhelmed with longing for his help. He goes on to lament and vent his raw feelings, and there's nothing wrong with that. But at the end, he uses the past faithfulness of God to prove that he will be faithful again. From verses 16 through 20, when the Red Sea saw you, O God, its waters looked troubled. The sea quaked to its very depths. The clouds pounded down rain. The thunder rumbled in the sky. Your arrows of lightning flashed. Your thunder roared from the whirlwind. The lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your road led through the sea. Your pathway through the mighty waters, a pathway nobody knew was there. You led your people along that road like a flock of sheep, with Moses and Aaron as the shepherds. This psalm is David's way of reflecting on God's power and past faithfulness. Though we can't feel him, he has not abandoned us. This season is a sea to walk through. It's not permanent. And the answer may be so miraculous of a journey that we can't yet understand what he's going to do. And God is not only behind us or only ahead of us, but right there with us, even when his footprints are unseen. Speaking of the Red Sea, the Israelites are really opposite of being good at reflecting on the past. When we were little, my mom used to read a Bible book for kids to my brother and me, and we would always get so angry and frustrated at the Israelites, who always forgot what God had done and did. And they had done things like wine or worse, go to other gods to see if that would work. Now that I'm older, one, I understand that the timing was not like in our book, where they happened within days of each other. And two, emotion, fear, and fatigue play a much higher role in decision-making during tragedies and emergencies. One of these situations I feel we can all relate to is the Red Sea. Israel as a nation were the slaves of the Egyptians. They were despised, abused, and worked to the point of exhaustion. They were already not in the best of emotional health at the time of their exodus. Moses came along, who wasn't exactly their favorite person, and showed God's power and authority to Egypt by defying their gods with the plagues in an attempt to get Pharaoh to let my people go. The Israelites got a front row seat to seeing what God could do. And then the time came. Run! Now! In the middle of the night, after centuries of living there, many of which as slaves, they were literally running for their lives, trusting that God would protect them. If that isn't scary enough, all of a sudden they heard an entire army chasing them, ready to steal them back. I don't know about you, but that almost sounds like a horror story. Running from your kidnapper in the middle of the night, only to realize he's following you in a vehicle full of weapons. And then there it was, the roadblock, the Red Sea. Have you ever felt this way? Bad thing after bad thing keeps happening, and just when it seems like you may have finally gotten out of it, you're surrounded with your previous nightmare behind you trying to catch up, and a new huge roadblock right in front. Seeing it this way, I don't blame them for panicking, but at the same time, I do wonder why they wasted any of that energy panicking when they totally could have had peace. You see, God is so much more powerful than that past hurt you're running from, and he will rescue again through that scary sight in front of you. And in many cases, just like this one, God will put the way through you safely across and also use it to completely destroy that past that's pursuing you. There are so many times when we get stuck in these places, paralyzed by anxiety, fear, fatigue, apathy. But instead of us panicking, God really wants us to still praise him. Paul and Silas were early missionaries to the non-Jews of the Roman Empire. To say that many people did not like them or what they stood for would be an understatement. In one such instance, Paul got annoyed by a demon-possessed slave girl who had been following them around. I'm not going to lie, that's a weird sentence to say. But he cast out the demon, and her owner got angry because now he couldn't make any money off of her, and he sent a mob out against him, stating that he was defying Roman law in his preachings. So, falsely accused, now pursued, Paul and Silas get severe beatings from these people, and then he gets thrown into prison. So what do these sad, wounded men do that night? They praised and they sang songs. And during that praising, God sent an earthquake to open the doors and release their shackles. Would God have still rescued them had they cried and wailed and pouted, something I probably would have done? I honestly don't know. But how powerful was it for those other inmates and guards to see God's glory when God's followers showed so much trust? So much so that it brought people to Christ. Back to a topic we talked about before in a little different context, waiting. And if you want to look more into waiting, you can listen to Waiting in the Shepherd's Field at botfpodcast.com/episode/5/. The trial, whether it be sickness, an injury, tragedy, something we physically or emotionally struggle through, has started. And we are praying and praying for the answer, but it doesn't come, or not as quickly as we wanted, or not the way we wanted. We're still waiting for the resolution, or at least a sign of what the resolution will be. But until then, we wait, often in pain. What we need to remember these times is that we serve a God who responds to us. Sometimes his response is to rescue us from it, and other times it's to stay with us through it. Always, so we continue to take steps. Throughout the Bible, there is a command that is said so often during these waiting valley times that I know it has to be important. Be strong and courageous. Psalm 27:14. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous. You wait patiently for the Lord. Joshua 1:9. This is my command. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. In the book, How to Strengthen Your Faith, Andrew Murray said, "If the answer to every prayer came immediately, how would we ever become acquainted with the Lord himself?" This thought was something I needed to wrestle with. It makes sense. I always grow closer to God in the times when it's really evident that I need him. But selfishly, it doesn't seem fair. A couple of really important things that I know have become much more tangible through my research in this is we cannot see trials from God's perspective, and God does not enjoy hurting people or causing sorrow. Let's take a look at that latter point. Lamentations 3:32-33 says, "Though he brings grief, he also shows compassion because of the greatness of his unfailing love. For he does not enjoy hurting people or causing them sorrow." Margaret Feinberg said something so poignant. "I cringe when people suggest that becoming a follower of Jesus will provide a sheath from hurt, pain, and loss. After all, Jesus was nailed to a tree, betrayed by a best friend, and stared death in the eyes. Yes, he triumphed, but he never went numb. He felt, he sensed, he ached, he cried out. We will too." So we need to go into this point remembering that not only does he not needlessly put us through pain, but that he himself has experienced lots of pain as well and knows personally how we feel. Lazarus was part of a family of siblings who were all close friends to Jesus. One day Jesus got news that Lazarus was really sick and asked for him to come. Jesus' response in John 11:4 was, Lazarus's sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So he waited 2 days before deciding to go back to Judea, which, by the way, was a place that recently just tried to stone him. And Jesus knew fully well that waiting for this day would result in Lazarus dying. But the Bible makes it clear that it was for God's glory, verse 4. And also verse 5 states without a doubt that Jesus loved Lazarus and his sisters Mary and Martha. How do you think everyone felt when Lazarus died, after Jesus had clearly stated that the sickness wouldn't end in death? Betrayed? Abandoned? Forgotten? When both Mary and Martha saw Jesus 4 days after Lazarus died, their response was, "If you would have been here, he wouldn't have died." I'm not sure if by the statement they were displaying anger toward him or just sadness for the timing, but I do know that I've felt the sentiment in both of these ways in my own life. If God was only there, this pain or loss or tragedy would never have happened. But just because Jesus allowed it to happen doesn't mean he was surprised or didn't have a plan. Actually, he had an amazing plan. He was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. But what Jesus did first still shocks me, humbles me, confuses me, and comforts me all at the same time. He knew what he was going to do. He knew he would keep his word, and Lazarus's sickness would not end in death. But this death and this tomb and all that it represented made him angry and sad. And he sat in front of that gravestone and he wept. You see, we serve a God where even death can't stop him from winning. Yet even when he knows his victory is right in front of him, he still takes the time to see how the injustice of death and pain affect us and to be moved by them as well. Again, Lamentations 3:32-33. Though he brings grief, he also shows compassion because of the greatness of his unfailing love, for he does not enjoy hurting people or causing them sorrow. Is God still faithful in the valley? The answer is yes. Not only is he faithful, but he is with us, he feels with us, he guides us forward, protects our back, and holds our hands all at the same time. And though the shadow of the valley is dark, when we can't see where he's taking us or why, we can look behind us and see how he is faithful, and he's faithfully gotten us this far. Why would he stop now? In our last installment of the Very Uplifting series, we'll take a look at whether or not God is still good, even when the answer to our deepest prayers is no. I'll give you a hint. He is. Isaiah 41:10. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.
This has been episode 16 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled, Is God Still Faithful in the Valley? For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/16. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast.